You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Visit us online at pod4ham, that's the numeral 4.com. Follow us on Twitter at pod4ham, or you can visit The Incomparable at theincomparable.com.
Even though we started at the very same time, Alexander Hamilton began to climb. How to account for his rise to the top? Man, the man is nonstop.
I'm Brian Hamilton.
Hi, I'm Scott Canaster.
Hi, I'm Serenity Caldwell, and you're listening to Nonstop via Pod for Ham. So nonstop. I have so many things to say. I can't even start because
well-named song.
Yeah, the song is just nonstop.
Yes, it's well named.
All right. Well, why don't we start with some broad thoughts about a very broad Act One finale, and then we can kind of go into it a little bit. There's a lot to unpack here.
I don't know about either of you, but the first time I listened to the cast recording, after Yorktown, I said, that's a great first act finale. Right?
Yep.
Okay.
No, exactly the same. I didn't know where the act break was, and I was positive it was Yorktown as well. But here we have it. It's so obvious that this is the act break once you get to the end of the song and realize they're reprising, 75% of every single thing that we've
all
heard so
of them,
far? It's incredible.
All of the characters, all of the primary characters, we're getting their musical themes. We're getting the core of their act one story. Oh, it's such...
Well, and then it ended and I thought, okay, you're not going to fool me again. I guess it's not the break now. And then it really was. So I felt toyed with a little bit by Lynn at that point, but great.
Of all the tricks Hamilton played, the greatest was thinking that you were at the end of Act One.
Well, I really felt like, it could have ended after Yorktown. And then there was Dear Theodosia. And then first there was another song by the King, right? And then Theodosia, and then we have Nonstop. And I thought, okay, I imagined Lynn telling himself, look, you have to stop at some point. So write a song called Nonstop, throw everything into it, and then we'll have intermission because people have to go buy souvenirs and go to the bathroom.
They have to process. So let's give them a lot to process so that they can actually think over the 15 minutes.
Well, going back to what you said, Scott, the fact that Yorktown wasn't the end of Act One, even though Act Two is completely different in a lot of ways, it illustrates the fact that the story isn't necessarily about the revolution at all. It's about the characters and the fact that Hamilton is torn between these two walls of audio on either side of him at the end of the song. That shows that the show is much more about the characters than any sort of the wars or cabinet battles, any of that stuff. It's all about the people. And I think that it does it so well. It illustrates it so perfectly that the play is about that based on that.
That's a great point. That's a great argument for not ending with Yorktown.
Yeah, I find it really interesting, especially the arc of Hamilton's character, because we really, you know, we start from the start of the musical where he is, you know, young, scrappy and hungry and I'm here and I'm ready to make my mark on the world and I'm ready to, you know, dive in. And the first way that I can do that is with the revolution. And, you know, in his mind, it's all about dying for his country. Right. And then we've got Washington talking about history has its eyes on you and we've got Yorktown. And I think Nonstop for me is the turning point at which he's like, okay, I've got the first chapter of my legacy secure. Time to do some work and really like get into the meaty parts. And especially you get hints of it throughout Act One. But it's really, I think, in this song where he starts realizing the broader scope and the broader picture of like, well, yeah, we won freedom for our country, but now we have to build a country. And that is more exciting than any old war or leading battles. And that's also a place for him to cement not only his legacy, but, you know, his crowning achievement, his place in upper echelons of society.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting that one of the ways he talks himself into public service is because he sees corruption and he wants to root it out. He doesn't just think about creating something great, although that's his obsession with his legacy reveals that. But he sees the corruption in Albany and in government, and that's what helps put him over the top to become more involved in public service, according to Nonstop.
It's almost like a switch is flipped, because the very first thing in the song is, after the war, I went back to New York, I finished up my studies, and I practiced law. And that's what the entire rest of the show is about. It's flipped immediately from being on the battlefield to being in the courtroom. And musically, we get that, because compare this to My Shot, we get lots of really not rough, but very like unrefined raps in My Shot, as compared to Corruption, such an old song we can sing along in harmony and know. It's like it's so much more rhythmic here and much more nuanced and refined in a way that it wasn't early in the show. So I feel like that musical transition fits in with the act break transition as well.
Yeah, this some of my favorite rhymes in the show are in this song. I yes. mean... Oh, it's so good. And nowhere is it stronger than in Albany. This economy is increasingly stalling. And honestly, that's why public service seems to be calling me. It's
nonstop.
It's innerly humble, or it's outerly humble. He's like, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm really concerned about corruption. But here he is showing off again. And the entire ensemble is acknowledging that.
And he says, I practiced the law. I've practically perfected it, which is it's a classic Lin Miranda double meaning of the word practice, right? It's you practice law means you're a lawyer, but it also means he's been practicing a lot and he's really good at it now. He's perfected it. And the tail flip he does on his coat, I think even whether you've seen the show or not, that clip is out there, right? And it's just such a great piece of choreography to punctuate the point that, oh, yeah, he's the best lawyer.
Oh, yeah. Not only the best lawyer, but now I'm going to be the best at creating a strong central democracy. I literally had this GIF open when we started the podcast, and it's just been looping in the background, and it's really enjoyable.
I'm doing a Syracuse media blackout of any Hamilton filming until either the canonical film comes out or I see the show, whichever comes first.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh, wow. This is technically, I think, from one of the PBS clips or the CBS clip, whatever.
It's legit.
It's a legit clip, but it's still very funny.
Well, he claims to be the best lawyer in this one verse, but the next verse, the very next verse, is when he steps too far at the Constitutional Convention, and people go, "Who the F is this?" Like, he steps too far and he flies too close to the sun, and we see his first bit of pride being the downfall of Hamilton in this next verse, right after he claims to be the best lawyer ever.
Oh, yeah.
And then he tells Burr that you're a better lawyer than I am, to which Burr responds, okay. Like, what do you need?
Yeah, exactly. Why are you bribing me? It's interesting to me, especially going back to the like best rhymes in the show. If not, then I'll be Socrates throwing verbal rocks at these mediocrities. Like, oh my gosh, there's something really wonderful about the fact that he's rhyming Socrates with mediocrities. although it's a little bit of a hat tip to Wicked.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That too.
Oh yeah. Well, exactly. But it's an interesting comparison to a literary and real world figure who eventually, you know, got executed because he was talking too much.
Layers upon layers.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So many layers.
In addition to the great rhymes, this has one of my favorite sly jokes in the show, which is later in the song when, Angelica says, "Don't forget to write." He's not going to forget to write. He writes all the time.
He's just nonstop.
Just nonstop.
I never thought of that before. That's incredible, because you're right. Of course, he wouldn't forget to write.
There you go. On the 800th listening, we still find new things.
There's layers upon layers.
Yes.
So many things to find, even after hearing it so many times. It's great.
Oh, my gosh.
True.
It's so one of the things that I do find interesting about this song is that Burr still features very primarily in the song, despite it's clearly about Hamilton. It's about Hamilton being nonstop, but Burr is in the first, you know, three lines of this song, and he continues to weave kind of in and out of Hamilton's life. And it's a nice picture of the overview of the show, where mm-hmm. Burr is the Burr is the unofficial second lead character of the show while still being a supporting character, but it's the way that it acknowledges it, the way that it's like, yes, if this show had been written slightly differently, we could have been watching the history of Aaron Burr with Alexander Hamilton as his one downfall.
I wonder if Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead version of this where Burr is the main character.
Yeah. I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure there are songs where it exists.
I love these moments in the show and the, where Hamilton and Burr are kind of buddies, or at least they're part of the way they're, like, they're not ready to kill each other yet, you know, where they get eventually. Maybe it's because I'm an optimist, but there are so many points where they're just on the verge of being lifelong friends, BFFs maybe, and...
Burr FFs, if you will.
Burr FFs. And then, oh. Or if I, and then something gets in the way, you know, like Burr, well, generally what gets in the way is Burr has no beliefs, no opinions, according to Hamilton. But they get close, like their little middle of the night discussion about what turns into the Federalist Papers. Yeah, Hamilton wants something from him, and that's why he starts that conversation. But they're still pals. They're colleagues. They're
co-counsel.
They're Hamilton, sit down.
Yeah, I mean, it is fascinating to me that at the beginning of this song, Hamilton and Burr are working together. And yes, Burr's kind of like, okay, buddy, you know, sit, holla down. Let's actually win this case and stop, you know, talking your mouth off too much. And he makes a really good point, actually, that carries through the show. I think about the discussion they have in the court battle where he's essentially like, our client Lammy Weeks is innocent. That's all you had to say.
Okay. You know?
Okay. One more thing.
Right.
It's like, I also like that. I also like the fact that even when they're about to kill each other, like you said, Scott, they're not ready to kill each other yet.
No.
In Your Obedient Servant, it's a funny, cute song about how pissed off they are at each other while still remaining cordial. But there's still something to their friendship when they're writing these nasty letters back and forth to each other. And even when they're planning on killing each other, they're not ready to kill each other,
absolutely,
which is fantastic.
It really is. And it adds to the tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of... when Hamilton says, okay, I think this song has several of Lynn's best bits of acting in the show where he, where a turn of phrase or the way he, it appears on his face, or maybe as I imagine the way it appears on his face, because I was lucky enough to see the show, but of course I've forgotten little things like that. Plus I was far back, but like when he says, okay, when he has to sit down and
exasperated,
then when he says, I was chosen for the Constitutional Convention. What a great line. What a great delivery that is. And how about at the very end when he says, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Yeah, let's okay. go.
Like he's way ahead of Washington at that point.
Mm-hmm. He's so excited to be the Secretary of Treasury at that point. And it comes across so perfectly in two words or one word slurred together. Like it's perfect.
Yep. And you also have Angelica's Don't Forget to Write, which is in addition to what you mentioned before, it's off scheme, right? Her entire beginning of this little song where she's like, I am sailing off to London, is all in rhyme. And then you've got, after she says, my Alexander, she holds it and she drops the scheme and essentially just pulls that out and then turns her back to him. And it's such a lovely moment in the show, where it's clear that she wants to say something more, and then she takes it away.
Immediately after that is my favorite rendition of the That Would Be Enough motif, because the song itself is beautiful, but I always end up skipping it when I listen through the soundtrack and get my That Would Be Enough fix in Eliza's verse in this song, because it's a little bit more upbeat. It fits a little bit better with everything. The little violin we hear as she's singing her second part of her verse really, really melts my heartstrings. And, you know... Yeah. Yeah, as much as I like That Would Be Enough as a song, this really hits me more than that song does.
And it's inverted.
It feels faster, which goes with the fact that it's called Nonstop and that there's this recurring theme about a guy who just writes all the time, really fast, like he's running out of time, like it's going out of style, like he needs it to survive. You know, there's a lot of tension. I feel a lot of tension when I hear those parts of the song because I feel the pressure that I assume Hamilton feels by having to write all this stuff and all the thoughts that are coming into his head, yes, and the way he has to put them all down. And I love the way Burr's singing on those parts is, to me, it's really kind of questioning. Like, it's very sing-song, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, he's wondering, whereas the ensemble is driving the tension because their beat or their notes are just rising. They don't go up and down. They're da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like that.
Running out of time. Yeah.
And it makes me nervous.
They're the Greek chorus. When I listened to this song, it was one of the first songs that I started playing over and over again. And partially it's because it's that collection of all of the different motifs of the show. And bringing it together in a really high level of artistry, where I have to give props not just to Lin-Manuel Miranda, but to his orchestrator, whose name is escaping me right now, and I feel terrible about it.
Alex Lacamoire.
Thank you, Alex Lacamoire. Yes, who just manages to weave in all of these threads and weave them in on, you know, starting on minor keys and switching to major keys and just, you know, making the themes for all of the main characters known and layering them on top of each other. It's a magnificent piece of work, but it feels, as you said, it feels frantic. It is one of the best songs that I can like say, hey, you want to know the process of a writer? This is basically, just listen to this song, because this is what I feel like goes through my head when I'm like writing. And I loved listening to this the first, like the first 200 times I listened to the soundtrack. I would loop this a couple times when I was writing, because I'm like, yeah, motivation, sort of. Motivation, yeah. But also, yes, tension and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, I need to get something done, and I'm not working as hard as Hamilton.
Yeah, exactly. Hamilton wrote the other 51.
My favorite meme from the show, blank did the other blank 51. I love it.
That's great.
On that note, Ren, going back for a second, because I'm musically illiterate, could you explain what inverted means when you mentioned Eliza's verse is inverted for the musically illiterate like me?
Oh, yeah. So I actually wasn't talking about music at all in that I was talking about the lyrics there. In that it's the only time where instead of she says that would be enough, she said, would that be enough? In the last three lines of her little verse, she gets a little aggressive. And it's the first time we've ever seen Eliza not be kind of, you know, moony over Hamilton and very much like, you know, all of this. But it's at the very end, she's like, just stay alive. That would be enough. And if your wife could share a fraction of your time, if I could grant you peace of mind, would that be enough? And it's
man.
Yeah, it's her first bit of agency in the show, like real agency in the show.
That's true. And this whole song is full of questions like that. I mean, the show famously starts off with how does a bastard orphan, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It does breaks with how does a blank, 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 et cetera, with the same musical motif. But it's all about how do you write like you're running out of time, how all of the how and why questions in the song. And that's one of them, because you need something to keep them coming back after the 15-minute intermission.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you think about the entire song is like, he's just nonstop. He's going crazy. And Eliza's whole questioning point is maybe you don't need to be nonstop. You know, maybe we can calm things down and I could make it so that you don't have to work all the time and worry about your legacy. Would that be enough? Oh, I just love it so much.
Sorry. I love it so much. And that leads us to the really great tense moment where the music stops and goes bump, bump, bump. Alexander. Bump, bump, bump. Oh, that makes me skip a beat in my heart every time I listen.
Yeah, because I really feel what Eliza wants at that point. And I know she's not going to get it. She wants more of his time. And he has to spend all his time doing what he has to do.
I also love the parallel lines here where when she first is like, Alexander, Hamilton's I have to leave. Sounds very much like Washington saying they're asking me to lead. And the first few times I heard it, I thought it was I have to lead and instead of I have to leave. And then he's also echoing what Washington is saying, right? Washington's like, I know it's a lot to ask to leave behind the world, you know.
Yeah.
And so he's using Washington's excuses right in there. And in fact, you know, he even says they are asking me to lead later on.
Then just like Washington did.
Yeah, and inverting Eliza's stuff, being, you know, actually using her theme and saying, look around at how lucky we are to be alive right now. I have to go do this thing.
It's like a really crappy boyfriend using an argument of the woman against her.
Right. Yes.
It's really
right.
bad.
Right. Like yeah. you almost expect him to say, remember, you said that.
Exactly. And Eliza's only response to that is helpless, because she's like, I can't debate with somebody. Like, don't change the key and not debate with me kind of thing, where he's like, I can't debate with somebody who's taking my words and wrapping them around. And I'm not, you know, Eliza's
what a mean
very
way to
smart,
fight.
But oh, it's like fighting. So I had an acting teacher who was obsessed with the idea of classical rhetoric and the way that you write classical rhetoric. And one of the things that he highlighted very early on that I found fascinating was he was like, if you look at Romeo and Juliet, which is probably one of the most, like, we think about it as one of the most tired Shakespeare plays because it's just overdone to death. But what makes Romeo and Juliet so special, like what sells their instant love connection, is not that they're young, like flirty kids in love. Like, you can sell that with enough, but the real thing that sells their connection is that they get each other's metaphors. They speak in some, like Romeo speaks in metaphor and Juliet responds with the metaphor and further pulls the metaphor out. And this is kind of like, it's a flip of that in this show, where Hamilton is so great with metaphors and with lyricism and just with words that he can take everybody's words and you know, work them in and out. Unfortunately, it's not quite in a romantic way in this case.
No, it's pretty manipulative.
Yeah.
And what's great for us as the audience is he's using that based on a relationship that we saw build. You know, we watched them from the start and learned the way they communicate and the way they get along as they did, as characters in the show, so that we're privy to the whole thing. When he uses it against her now and when she says helpless, we've seen all that coming, so we're emotionally invested in it too. And I think when he proposes to her, doesn't he say, I swear you'll never be helpless.
Yeah.
When she sings helpless, and here she says helpless. So, Alexander.
Already breaking your promises, and it's not even act two yet. Ugh. And then Angelica is just like, he's never going to be satisfied. And Eliza goes,
she's singing
what would
loud
be enough
from across the sea.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Writing in letters. He will never be satisfied. And then she echoes her own. She's like, what would be enough to be satisfied?
Right, with no answer.
Yeah.
Because no answer is possible.
Oh, so good. And then, of course, you close it with, I'm not throwing away my shot. Just you wait. The Greek chorus. Yeah,
and the gunshot sound effect after he sings that.
Oh, it was incredible. Fades
out.
Just before that, my favorite moment in the entire show, I'm positive I've said that at least 5 times on this podcast. My favorite moment in the entire show for tonight is when on one side of the stage, I'm guessing I haven't seen the show, but you can confirm or deny how I feel this the staging for this goes. But on one side of the stage, you have Angelica and Eliza belting out things from Helpless and Satisfied to kind of pull Hamilton over to their side while everyone else, Washington, the chorus, the fact that the chorus is over there is important, is singing History Has Its Eyes on You. And Hamilton eventually responds with I'm Not Throwing Away My Shot to them, because as everything builds for a few bars, all of a sudden everything becomes quiet and all we hear is history has its eyes on you. And that's when we know that side won. That's when we know that he is leaving Eliza for his country and his work. And it's heartbreaking because he comes in and defiantly screams, I am Alexander Hamilton, goddammit, just you wait. And that's how the show ends, or the act ends. And it sets the stage for all the awful stuff that comes of that in act two, when Take a Break and Say No to This happen. That is the payoff for when he chose his work over his family and his wife. And it's heartbreaking and somehow inspiring, because you're right. I have had the soundtrack play while I'm writing, while I'm working, while I'm trying to get motivation to do something I really don't want to do. And this song is one of those things that makes me go, yeah, I can be better than myself, but hopefully I'm not going to be a crappy boyfriend.
Fingers crossed.
But throughout the whole show, there's a subtext of really, in my mind, I compare Hamilton with Lin-Manuel Miranda, who created the show. And obviously, right? So whenever people ask Lin about to compare himself to Hamilton, he always says a variation of the same thing. No, Hamilton's a genius. I have to work as hard as I can just to be 1/10 of as productive as him. And I absolutely take him at his word when he says that. But since I'm not him, I can, and I never met him or Hamilton, I can be more objective and see the strong parallels between these two guys. Miranda, who's not a character in the show, right? So he's outside the realm of the show. But I think in this song, it, for me anyway, it hits the hardest that Why Do You Write Like You're Running Out of Time reminds me of what I know of Lin Miranda by just by observing him as a famous person, watching him on social media and in interviews. He seems to work all the time. He works really hard, but he doesn't neglect his family maybe as much as Alexander did. I don't know. But there is, if I think that's a whole another way to watch the show or to listen to this song is to kind of remove yourself. Let's say on the 200th listening, after you've listened 200 times, on the 201st, you can just think about what is he consciously or subconsciously saying about his own life when he talks about his family or his children or the work he has to do. They're different men doing completely different things in different times, but he was drawn to Hamilton because he's a writer. They're both writers. And there's a lot of strong parallel to think about, especially in this song, I think.
Yeah.
My favorite thing I've seen of Lin and Hamilton fandom in the past week or so is a tweet that said, get yourself a man that looks at you like Lin-Manuel Miranda looks at literally everyone. And there was 5 pictures or so attached of Lin looking at everyone with that glint in his eye and that smile he does. And he's so genuine in a way that Hamilton so obviously isn't. Yeah, he's so happy in a way that Hamilton so obviously isn't based on this song. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the things that if you talk about, you know, author versus actual work, one of the things that I think differentiates the character from the true person is that Lin-Manuel has, you know, has a warm family life, right? He grew up with warm, loving parents who brought him into the rooms where it happened and taught him, you know, everything. He taught him about musicals and taught him about politics and all of this. Yeah. And he has a wonderful wife and he has a wonderful kid. And that's a very different scenario than the way that Hamilton grew up.
Yes.
And it's almost like you look at Hamilton, you look at Burr, and then you look at Miranda. And they're all, you know, 3 people, 2 with orphaned parents, 2 who are orphans and 1 who is clearly not, but all 3 of whom were working like dogs. And what also interests me at the very end with the company, right, is that I almost wonder if this is not internal on Hamilton's part, where it's the imposter syndrome almost in a weird way, where it's, you know, you've got the women talking about this, but just having history has its eyes on you echoing in Hamilton's head, being like, this is important. This is, you know, this is my life's work and my family can wait because this is my life's work. And, you know, Burr's criticisms of me can wait because this is my life's work and I am not throwing away my shot.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Everybody can have a family. Only I can do this work. There's nobody else in the world.
There's no one else who can do it. Yeah.
But one more thing about Lin Miranda that strikes me is that he is a genius certified by the MacArthur Foundation. Mm-hmm. It's not just an adjective. And his, you know, his work on musical theater is amazing. But the thing that really astonishes me the most about him is how he is deeply versed in every pop culture fandom you can imagine. Like every pop culture character, actor, writer, nerd, artist who comes to the show ends up with a picture with him, and Lin says something brilliant in the tweet, which I really don't think he asked his staff to look up. Say, find me something clever to say about Game of Thrones.
I'm sure he looked it up. It's either he looked it up himself or he knows it.
It seems to me like he just knows it. And I'm like, when did you have time to learn about all these pop culture fandoms, to watch all this TV or read all these books? But I think he did.
Yeah.
No, he's not Lights, Camera, Jackson making a really crappy pun about every celebrity he meets. He is Lin-Manuel Miranda really appreciating everyone who comes to the show.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine even if he doesn't know, say, a certain celebrity personally, being able to go up after and look into that and to be, you know, actually spend some time researching and say, hey, you know, I am going to acknowledge this wonderful thing you did by coming to my show, by acknowledging you and acknowledging who you really are, not like a one word blip on the radar. I have to think that he does what I know a couple people can do. I certainly can't, which is the whole listen to television while writing. That drives me insane, but I wouldn't be surprised Lin-Manuel had like West Wing on repeat while running the show.
And I think once in a while he trolls the famous people too. I think when Kanye West was there, he told him the show is really about you, Kanye. And Kanye, and Kanye said, yes, yes, I think you're right.
Oh boy.
Oh my God. That's magical. He stays so humble this entire time, even while Hamilton won all these Grammys, even when he won the Genius Foundation, who, let's be honest, just wanted a ticket to the show, so they paid half the price of a ticket for a show for the grants. And he's stayed so incredibly humble. He's so good to his fans and so genuine on Twitter. I think it's incredible. I would, if I were in his position, I am positive I would not be as good-hearted and good-natured about everything that was happening to me, let's be honest.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Oh, maybe you would, Brian.
Oh, who knows? Who knows?
Let's hope you get a chance to find out.
The private venting. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't want to talk the Pod for Ham listening audience ears off for hours, although I am sure we could about this song. We've already talked for about three times its running length. No, four, five times its running length, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Who the F are we?
Yeah, seriously. So any closing thoughts about Nonstop?
Love this song.
It's been my favorite. It moves in and out of the rotation. It's really one of the best numbers in the show.
This is the song I send people when I try to get them into Hamilton and explain that ending chunk to them with the company and the characters all tearing at Lin-Manuel from all angles, and try to explain that that is the kind of really in-depth theater that you get with the show.
Yeah, you know, it's a really good previously on Hamilton because it reprises so much. And, I mean, the whole first act and musically reprises all the characters' numbers, as you said earlier.
Yeah. Were you not paying attention during the entire first act? Don't worry, we'll catch you up and advance the story a little bit. Have fun at act two. Yeah, I agree with all of this. I find Nonstop to be incredibly... Again, incredibly inspiring in some ways from an artistic point of view, in that it's just, it's incredible piece of work, but also the work itself tends to be inspiring in writing and just in, it's something like I'll listen to it in the car when I'm like, I need a good pump up, like driving. It's a really wonderful song, and it actually, weirdly, I feel like it can stand on its own despite being incredibly story driven. It can stand on its own as like just a song that I listen to in the rotation.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well said.
Oh gosh. Okay. We're gonna stop talking about Hamilton because otherwise we will be nonstop. I'm Serenity Caldwell.
And I'm Scott Canaster.
And I'm Brian Hamilton.
And you have been listening to Pod for Ham.
This ends Act 1 of Pod for Ham. There will be a brief intermission.